open a book and it invites you to fall in.
That was my North Star. I always sailed towards that star.
You're believing that there's a story here that if you chisel away at all the extraneous stuff, you'll wind up with something that does justice to this person who's entrusted his life to you.
Welcome to the National Writer Series from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Doug Stanton. Daniel Bergner tries to create a high level of intimacy between his characters and the reader, even though his books are mostly nonfiction.
Because I want you to be relating to the character with that intense closeness that you have when you're reading a character in a novel that you love. And if it's the painful scenes or the scenes of triumph, yeah, my job is to give you that sense of being inside the scene.
Daniel Bergner is the author of 5 books, including In the Land of Magic Soldiers and his latest, Sing for Your Life, about African-American opera singer Ryan Speedo Green. He's also a journalist who writes for the New York Times Magazine and other publications. Bergner talks this hour with Interlochen Public Radio music host and producer Kate Botello. She asked Bergner how he first heard about Ryan Speedo Green.
The long version goes back to my daughter, who was applying and then just getting into conservatories as an opera singer. She's long since decided it's way too narrow a target and taken another path. But I loved to dispense my wisdom about her singing when she was 18. And I figured once she got into conservatory, I better learn a little more fast if I was going to continue to dispense wisdom. So I went to my editors at the New York Times Magazine and said, you know, there's this annual contest that the Metropolitan Opera holds to find the most promising singers, young by opera standards, so up to the age of 30. They knew nothing about it. They said, great. I went off and started with the district rounds all over the country, and it came time for the semifinals. And here's what happened. So I got the list of the semifinals from the Met. There were 22 of them. I wrote to them by email. I said, write to me about anything, your relationship to music, your life, whatever you want. And everyone wrote back, some at great length, thinking, yeah, chance at the cover of the New York Times Magazine, I'm gonna grab this. Every single one of them wrote back except Ryan Speedo Green. Not a word from him. When I was hovering around the Met, waiting for the semifinals, nothing. Ryan Speedo Green made himself very scarce. I didn't think anything of it because the insiders at the Met were not saying, hey, you should keep an eye on Ryan Speedo Green. He might win. He might actually have a career. And so I just proceeded. And then I heard his voice in a rehearsal, heard how rich it was. Didn't matter how raw it was, there was certainly something magical there, and then began to hear just a little bit of his story. As he tells it, I finally persuaded him to have a lunch that he agreed to for 45 minutes in the Met cafeteria, and that turned into 3 hours, and that turned into years. That was back in 2011.
And when you're doing that, so you're making friends with somebody, basically. Making a new friend, sort of.
It's interesting you phrase it that way. It's a very intense kind of intimacy. I wouldn't actually call it a friendship. It's something both more than that and less than that. I'm not equally confiding in him. And so it's not exactly a friendship, but it's an intense level of trust that's building up over time, where he's entrusting his story to me, and I hope I am rising to the level of the trust he's placing in me, both in terms of his confidence, but then also in terms of my job of finding the language and finding the sort of structure of narrative to really do justice to what he's laying before me.
And how can you let him know that you're going to do that? Because you get people to tell you some stuff, Daniel Bergner. How do you get people to tell you this stuff?
You know, first of all, I can't guarantee that I'm going to do that because each book is an incredible challenge, right? So how do I win that trust? I think partly it's just being deeply, genuinely interested in listening and understanding. It's being willing to ask the same questions over and over again and listen again and empathize and imagine and then come back and ask yet again to make sure. And even though on the one hand that could seem relentless and sort of burdensome, on the other, it's an attempt to really go deep. And I think for the most part, we all long for that. There's no trick here. It's like we all want to be understood. So it's almost as simple as that. And you know, if the connection's right, and of course I feel like I'm writing about things that have obsessed me forever, so the interest really, you know, has a deep foundation for me, and I think that other person, in this case Ryan, is really responding to that.
And then you're not afraid to say, in fact you openly say, when you don't understand something, or that you're in a position not to understand.
I'd say I, more than that, openly acknowledge that, you know, whether, you know, it wasn't, by the way, quite women's orgasms. It was women and desire. But whether it's a subject as where there's a clear subjective divide, or whether it's a, or with Ryan, like, you know, black, white, totally different upbringings, even on a superficial level, 6'5", and, you know, what he sees as tiny, 5'10¾". You know, we're crossing a kind of a divide, a chasm, and I feel like it's important to acknowledge that. It's not a reason not to do these works of narrative journalism. In fact, there's every reason to do them because of the divide, but you kind of have to start from fully acknowledging that distance and confiding that awareness of distance in the person, and that thereby freeing them to sort of bring you closer and bring the reader closer. I guess that's what I hope that creates, a kind of intimacy for the reader as well.
Because I think, you know, people talk about, write about what you know, but you specifically seek what you want to know, it seems to me.
Yes, but.
But.
I think there's, yeah, it's writing about what you want to know, but there's also an identification. And you know, in the Ryan story, it really goes back. You know, I rarely talk about this, but so in some ways I've been writing about race since high school. I had this really, really close friendship with a black kid who, I was in Seattle at the time, and they had a very small busing program. This was way, way back. And rather than have the riots that were going on in Boston, they decided to have this small voluntary busing program, and this kid who I became very close with was part of that. We became inseparable. And then that friendship ended in a pretty tumultuous way, and I ended up writing my college application essay about that. So in some way, like, this is not foreign. This is really, really close. And I'd say in different ways we could go into it. Even the prison book, I felt this affinity. So yeah, it's crossing distances, but always with me having this attachment underlying the distance.
But when you can find yourself talking about some really sticky things, you know, really complicated issues that a lot of people might kind of shy away from, what is it in you that makes you seek out that conversation? Was it in your family? Were you raised in a family of very open talkers? How did that happen?
You really want me on the couch here. And I'm ready, so just, you know, we can pretend the rug is a couch. I don't know. It's like this desire. It's, you know, if any of you know, E.M. Forster can go back, you know, ways to when he read Passage to India way back in college, maybe. I mean, you know, he talks about only connect. That's the phrase. Like, that's sort of his mission, and I guess I share that. It's this wish to connect, and it's when it's happening, whether it's in conversation or whether it's then later, you know, at my desk alone, but finding the words to create that connection that brings me back to the person and then forward to the reader, I don't know, there's something magical in that to me. There's something hypnotic to me. It's a release, and it's spiritual. It's a fully, I'd say, when it's going really, really well, I'd say it's a fully It's a kind of religious experience.
Well, now that takes me to a completely different place, interestingly, because we'll talk about in the land of magic soldiers for a minute there.
Okay.
In magical experience, because you were talking about Father Chema. Yeah. And I think this is a perfect time to kind of talk about that, because he was a priest who saw all kinds of awful things and he heard heartbreaking confessions, but he still was this incredibly loving person. And how did that, is that what spoke to you so much? I mean, I know you mentioned that that was very, critical to you.
Right, so we better give a bit of background.
Yeah, sorry, jumping forward. But
second nonfiction book I did, I went to Sierra Leone as it was still sort of finding its way out of, at the tail end of, a very, very brutal civil war. And in fact, somewhere out there, Mary Kortenhoven, hello. I began following one of the family I began following was from Grand Rapids, and a missionary family who traveled from Grand Rapids with their young children to a tiny village in the middle of Sierra Leone to do good work there, to bring clean water, to bring a bit of education, to bring a bit of promise to a very, very difficult place. Their story is one of the things that utterly captivated me and that I ended up writing about in The Land of Magic Soldiers. Another, as you say, was this priest, Father Chema, who worked with child soldiers, and this is gonna take us to a pretty dark place pretty fast, however necessary. So sort of the signature atrocity of the war was that really multiple sides would amputate limbs and then leave that person to live as a kind of as a effort at just the most pure, raw kind of intimidation. And Father Chema worked with kids who'd done this, and he had this small camp by the sea full of these young teenagers. And he also had, he was very alone, he was a Spanish priest working by himself there. And he also had by his bed this small, broken crucifix. Now, you gotta realize, I'm Jewish. This was not like, I didn't go to seek out, you know, my lost Catholic self. But I immediately found this tremendous spiritual profundity. I can't capture to you, I hope the words do in the book, the beauty of this crucifix, and that it was broken, of course, was very emblematic given the atrocity that he was dealing with. And I guess the level of sort of gentleness and of ability to go deep with these kids. I don't know, again, it was one of these stories I just could not walk away from. It was magical, and it was a reminder of what we're capable of as human beings. And sometimes I guess you have to go really far out there. I was pretty far from home to really find those stories in such a distilled form that can remind us of who we are.
And yet you find then, again, spiritual profundity, that Ryan, for instance, you describe him as a radiant human being, but he certainly had a difficult road to get there.
Incredibly difficult. So Ryan grew up in southeastern Virginia and grew up in low-income housing and in a trailer park, and then when his mom could no longer afford the payments there, he grew up in basically a shack that was across the street from this drug dealer's headquarters, and there was a ton of drug traffic on his street. He was harassed by the dealers. Along the way, too, he had a very volatile relationship with his mom, a very violent one in both directions. His mom was angry at her two sons for she felt ruining her life. And at 12, he threatened her life, threatened the life of his brother, and was taken away, not only in cuffs, but in leg shackles, put in the back of a police car, driven all the way across the state, locked up, and was so angry there and was lashed out so often and so violently at staff and other residents that he was put in the seclusion cells there. And again, important to emphasize, this is a 12-year-old kid. And I can still remember